All right, so I am Caitlin Lewis, and I'm here with Anton Black. Today is February 22nd, 2018, and we are at Anton's home in Roanoke, Virginia. And this is an interview for the QTPOC Oral History Project, Representation Matters, for the Southwest Virginia LGBTQ Plus Oral History Project. Woo, that's one. So, Anton, you can go ahead and start off by telling me about your childhood. So, like, where you grew up. You told me a story about when you were six, and so I think that was, like, that's a good age to start remembering things, just because I think before that you don't really remember too much, or maybe you did, but just go ahead and tell us about your childhood, and we'll start with that.
Well, I grew up, I was born here in Roanoke, but then we moved to Colorado. My father was in the Air Force. So I have a little of that in me, just being outside all the time, enjoying myself out at the Rocky Mountains, Pike Peaks, things like that. But when I came back to Virginia, I was five, and I always knew I was different from the second I stepped into the classroom. I had different interests, male interests, typically things that you would associate with boys. Football has always been near and dear to my heart. I didn't understand why I could not play with the boys. The teacher would not let me. At one point, I wanted to be a pro wrestler because I thought that was just the best profession anybody could ever be in. But probably the time that I started really getting the thought in my head that I was different for a specific reason was around age 6 or 7, where I was at my grandmother's house, and I told her I felt like a boy trapped in a girl's body. And she immediately, even though we had a Bible on that table, ran to the bathroom to get the bigger print Bible and told me how wrong that was and I couldn't think like that and please don't say that in front of anybody because I would embarrass her and the family. And that's pretty much how that moment went, and it did define me for a little while because then I felt very ashamed that I'd even thought this way, you know. So that defined me for quite a bit. I did live in a house where my parents did not get along. They didn't divorce till after I had grown up and left the situation. But while we didn't go to church as a family, we typically didn't, it was very... homophobia was evident in some cases. I didn't realize that my uncle had a homosexual relationship because nobody talked about it. You know, so I actually thought I was the first. But they informed me that, no, he had one. And it was a bad relationship. So I'm assuming my general family got that bad taste in their mouth from that relationship. But childhood, I'm a geek. I was always a geek. That never really changed. I'm into Star Trek more than Star Wars, you know. I had fun. I was the geeky kid with the guitar roaming around campus in high school singing peace songs and whatnot. That's just, it's who I am. It's not for everybody. And it was definitely odd for the little black nerds. We're not a thing. When I was growing up, it was just not a thing. So I guess people may have seen me as different anyway just from that. But I didn't know how to express myself sexually as far as who I was and sexual identity. So I think I just got lost in my nerd scope, big science fiction fan, and I kind of stayed there because a lot of times sexuality wasn't as important in those types of movies and books. That's really my childhood. Geek spin and... very confused about my orientation. Not a lot more to that.
So do you think that had a lot to do with growing up kind of in the 70s where it was like kind of a cuspy type of era where things were changing but it also were drawing back on the past and like the tradition of things? So we were talking about like the black church and the Bible on a table, but also the one in the bathroom. So, like, do you think that had an effect on, I guess, the confusion or the thought process that you were going through and your lived experiences, trying to figure out where you were?
I think that the 70s in itself, because I was born in 73, so I was more of an 80s baby. And I think, honestly, the androgyny of some of the 80s helped out. You know, I do remember going to school. My grandmother, the same one who was very upset about the boy in a girl's body, Family Ties was on it. Michael J. Fox, for some reason, I loved that character. And I wanted to be like him. So we went to JCPenney's. We got me a blue pantsuit. And I had a little briefcase. And I was roaming the halls of Woodrow Wilson thinking I was it. Because, you know, I was dressed in my business attire. So, you know, there's pop culture things that did influence me in the 80s. Not necessarily black. Culture Club. You know, that androgyny that came out, and then Pete Burns. So a lot of that music helped you feel like it was okay to be you. But I could only be me in my bedroom with the door closed, and the vacuum cleaner as my microphone, and the tennis racket as my guitar. And boy, was I pissed if somebody opened that door. But I could be me, you know, in that aspect. And I didn't see a lot of role models for me at that moment. That's true. I mean, the androgyny didn't really cross the other line. Michael Jackson was there, but there was not an androgynous component to it. You know, Little Richard was as close as I can get to having a remotely androgynous, but that was just because he didn't want people thinking he was trying to date women. You know, so for me it was a strange period. As far as the 70s, I was just very, very young, you know, and disco was dying by the time I started listening to music, you know, but I do remember my parents were huge into music. They played Roberta Flack, you know, all the old stuff. You know, Aretha Franklin was big in our house. Stevie Wonder was big in our house. But as far as me and help, that helped me to identify love and peace and beauty and art. But it didn't help me to identify within myself. Not that the 80s did either. I'm being honest. It was just the androgynous complex that it wasn't so hard to be androgynous. But I think I was in high school when I was asked directly if I was gay. And I said no. I said no. I even dated boys to prove I wasn't gay. Oh, God. You know, sometimes I don't think how lucky kids realize they are today. And in some cases, it's backtracking. I mean, they were lucky under the past administration, you know, because people's ignorance and their anger couldn't show up through as much. So now it almost feels like it's backtracking to where you don't necessarily feel as safe as you used to, or that you can be as open about your life as you used to. So, okay. Did I answer it?
Yeah, you
I
did.
Told you I rambled.
No, you did. No, that's okay. I like rambling for the purposes of us talking for an hour. I'm down for it.
Cool.
So, let's see. Talking about the blue suit and the suitcase, and you were to Woodrow. Was that still in middle school?
Oh, yeah, it was a middle school at okay. the time. It was a junior high at the time. It's middle school now. Okay. But, I mean, it was. People knew. I knew in middle school. It wasn't really, or in junior high, it wasn't really a question. In fact, I went by T. And because I was so masculine, basically, is the point. And Mr. T, even though he had been out of the picture for a little while, but people were like, Ice-T, don't like green! You know, I was like, what? But, you know, that Mr. T reference was there. And I guess that was as much as it was acknowledged. But, boy, did I fight that rumor in high school like nobody's business, you know, that I could possibly be gay. Because, let's face it, black churches, 70s, 80s, 90s, they had 2000s, they had no part. You know, and they talked pretty openly about their disdain for gays. So, you know, when you have family members, you know, not my immediate family, but my other family members went to church. So, you know, we apparently went like Easter and Christmas, so we weren't.
So you're the holiday one.
Yeah, right? It's a holiday visit. Oh, you know, we haven't seen you before. A lot of new faces in the crowd. Thank you very much. You know, but for the family that did go to church, especially the older family, there wasn't no way I was going to some of my grandparents and saying I'm gay, you know, or their sisters and brothers. It wasn't going to happen. So, you know, you live your life as a lie, and that sucks so bad. I lived my life as a lie so hard that I convinced myself for a period of time, maybe I could be straight. You know, I got married. You know, I had a kid. I'm thankful for the child. He's an excellent young man, but and had I not gone through that phase, I wouldn't have him. So, you know, in that aspect, great. But I still live part of my life as a lie. And thank God he's such an open-minded young man, and he understands, and he's a true ally, because he's straight in every sense of the word. But he's a true ally, and that, you know, he's helped me deal with the things that come, you know, and he lets me know that it's okay. He was there for me when I decided I was going to transition, you know, which was a long time coming. So he's a great young man. He's a great ally to the community. But again, I was never straight, you know. And I think there's a lot of people that go through that. I'm not the only one. I just came from an earlier era where a lot of us tried very hard to make our parents happy, you know. Because mamas will gripe about grandbabies. They, you know, they want grandbabies, and it's very hard for them to come to terms with maybe you're not getting a grandchild out of this particular daughter or son. So I can understand that, but it wasn't my truth at the time. Out of it came a beautiful young man, but it wasn't my truth. And so now, at 44, I'm determined to live my truth. I don't know if I answered the question or not.
You did. Trust me, if you don't, then I'll go ahead and go back to it. Like, so, once again, let me just ask you this question. No, I think you touched on it. What denomination were you raised with or brought up in?
I can't tell you. I really can't tell you, because it was really, we just showed up at church when somebody invited us and they hounded us about it, you know. When I was early adult, I was baptized Baptist, but I heard some very disturbing things come. We had a youth outreach, or we had an outreach program, and we went down to Salem Avenue to the Samaritan Inn, where we served food and did all that. And we were there during the day, and there were some women of the night, so to speak, that were walking on the corner, and the pastor who was on the bus that took us there said something about the little misguided children. I mean, he was very negative. That was the most positive thing he said, and it clicked with me right then. Is this really where I want to be? You know, am I a Christian? Yes. That hasn't changed for me. It won't change for me. I'm not an organized religion person, because I find so much of that with an organized religion. I also love some Buddhist principles. So I try and live my life right. I try and be good to other people. And I think that means more than a particular denomination or anything else. Because my grandmother, she took me to church one time, great-grandmother. And, you know, they were screaming and dancing, and somebody caught the Holy Spirit. I'll be honest, I was 10 and I was petrified because I didn't know what was going on. But, you know, it's just one of those things for me. Organized religion really didn't follow what I was doing with my life. Some of the things that come out of preacher's mouth scare me. So
did you ever confide in, maybe, like, while you were in the youth, you said outreach?
Yeah.
Program, or like any other church affiliated Christmas time, Easter time, whatever conversation that you would have had with other church members or congregation members, did you confide in anybody about these feelings that you were having, or was that just stopped there at 10? You're like, I can't be talking to these people.
Well, see, at 10, it was one of those come along for a holiday things. And that was the way it was throughout my life. And I never really confided in anybody in the church. I wasn't close to anybody in the church. You know, I was there 2 times a year. Mm-hmm. That incident with the Baptist church happened when I was 18. And I wouldn't have confided in anybody because of the other comments that went around on the bus. It made me literally so uncomfortable that I think I went back one more time and then I stopped. And then our youngest child went to a church in Roanoke last year. Or it was 2 years ago that he went, and he invited us to come. And so we went to the church with him. And the pastor deliberately went after the fact that we were gay. Wow. From the instant we sat down. Because we had let him go with a neighbor. I've always believed in letting my children figure out the path for them as far as spirituality and religion. My partner's Catholic, or was born Catholic. So I didn't want to force anything down anybody, you know, especially my kids. You find your way, your path that fits you. And I guess that came from me being pushed into a path, you know, let's be straight so everybody's happy. But, you know, it was really, really hard to sit in that audience while that pastor deliberately demeaned us. Because he said, I had something else to talk about today. Oh, really? So we left, and my son at that moment said, I'm never going back. And he hasn't been back. But that was his decision. I also didn't tell him he couldn't go back. You know, it was his decision, and he felt what happened was completely inappropriate and wrong in the spirit of God. So he chose not to go back, and I respected his decision. I'm not sure how it would have felt if he wanted to go back, but luckily he came to me before that time and said, I'm just not going back. I have no idea what the question was.
So, let's see, we talked about... So you said 18 was about when that incident happened.
Yeah.
And then we kept trucking along and you talked about your son and how recent that kind of conversation was about, like, the gays and what that means and how even today in society... Like in 2018, where that's kind of a, like, it's a common word in understanding, like, people who are gay in your community and even in your family, but it's still even recent today, down the street, going to church on Sunday. But question about when you started going to places, I guess, on the flip side that did support the feelings that you had. Oh, there's a smile. So the feelings that you had about, like, who you are and you trying to figure that out in the spaces that allowed you to actively do that. So, like, I know the park was founded in 78, which is a few years after you were born, and so clearly weren't there, like, hanging out with people, but how was that happening?
The truth is, as far as places that were defined as safe, the park was the only place that I knew of. However, I had gotten married and I had a kid, and it wasn't till I was 21, I think, 20 or 21, that I even stepped in the door of the park. Now, keep in mind, I hadn't been to nightclubs. Okay, I had a baby, you know, so...
When did you get married? Just to, like, frame 18. It? 18? Okay.
Yeah, I was 18, and Scott was born when I was 19. Okay. You know, so for me, to step into the park when I had a two-year-old son, and it was, wow, you know, it was huge for me because I'd never been to a nightclub. You know, you can't, did you go here or here or here? I hadn't been to any wrong nightclubs. But my mom was watching my son for a weekend, and I was like, okay, well, I'll go out. And strangely enough, my partner now is who took me to the park. It was three of us. It wasn't like a date or anything, but she took me. She had to explain the ins and the outs, you know, because I didn't know. I thought sometimes when people just ask you to dance, that's all it was, you know. But, you know, I went there, and there was this music, you know, just thumping, and this whole atmosphere of fun let go. And then that's what I realized. That's what people go there for. It's the one place they can be themselves. no retribution, no judgment, you know, because I saw men in dresses with beards, you know, which I was like, wow, because, you know, I was coming out of this straight relationship. I saw drag queens, I saw DJs just getting in the booth, and I saw people on a quest to have fun and be themselves and not be scared. So that was a beautiful thing. It was nice to have that space where I could just be me, because up until that point, I had not experienced it. You know, so I owe a lot to the park. And that was when I was young, just so I could figure out it was okay to be me. It's nice when you're surrounded by other people who have similar interests, especially in lifestyle. There was a big period of time that I was away from the park. I had kids to raise, you know, and we have four, so that's a lot of kids. At one point, my niece was involved with us, too. She was living with us, too, so that was five, so that's a lot. I didn't start going back until my youngest turned 13, you know, but again, I was a shut-in for a very long time. Can't tell you about other bars, because I never went. You know, so I was a shut-in because of the agoraphobia. Agoraphobia is Greek for fear of the marketplace. Basically, it means you can't stand to be in crowds, have severe panic attacks, tra-la-la-la. But after that, you want me to go into that now or later?
If you want to go into that now, you'd be more than welcome to.
Okay. In 2012, my partner was very tired of not doing things together.
And this is the partner that brought you to the park?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, she wasn't my partner at that time.
Yeah.
But we ended up getting together in 1995. And she wanted us to do things together, you know, out in public. But I, of course, had the issues. So she convinced me, okay, we can't go to Pride in the Park. Can we just go to the park after? And I was like, okay, we can go to the park. And, you know, I had to take a Xanax because I knew I was going to flip out. And that's the one thing you don't want, is somebody having to call the ambulance and people all gawking at you and everything. But we went in, and that bar was filled with people, filled with love. It was the last day of Pride weekend. You know, it was fantastic. And while I missed Pride in the park, the festival, as soon as you walked in, there was this feeling of love and encouragement. You know, come in, be yourself. Yeah, so we went that night, and it was the first time that I'd been out in public that I wasn't afraid. You know, because I wasn't afraid of a panic attack. I wasn't afraid that anybody was going to say anything to me or directly about me or be horrible to me in some way or judge me in some way. So that was really the turning point for me, and I owe a great deal of that to that bar. It's not about the alcohol. It's not about, you know, because at that point they didn't even have an alcohol. They had beer. You know, that was it. You know, there was no mixed beverages. It was just nice to be in a room full of people that all felt we deserve to be able to love who we wanted. And, you know, so that was special for me. And that was really the turning point for me. That was my established place where it was like a second home. And it still is to me to this day. It's the one place that I know outside of these four walls that I'll be loved and accepted for who I am. So, yeah, it's extremely important to me. That's why I joined Pride, you know, to do my part. Because there's a community out here that needs us, and they need us in several different ways. You know, and Run Up Pride is not just about that festival. Yes, the festival's huge. It's got to be, you know, because that's where people from all over Southwestern Virginia come to celebrate who they are together, and our allies. God knows we love them. You know, but that's why that day is so important. But we do so much more than that. So for me, that's me giving back to the place that gave to me. That's important to me.
When did you start being more of a part of the Pride process, whether it be like in the park, like inside the park or at the park, like where the big Pride festival outdoors are?
It's a strange question, and it has a slightly lengthy answer. I told you I came out of the house to the park in 2012. Mm-hmm. There was a cancer benefit in March 9th of 2013. And I participated in that with my youngest daughter. And that was the first time I was on stage. And because we were raising money for cancer, I said, you can get past the agoraphobia for this moment. You know, or at least I thought I could. Again, I had someone else on stage with me, so it was beautiful and helped me in that moment. But raising money for cancer, we did the song by U2-1 together with Mary J. Blige. And the reception was really good for that. It was my first time on stage. And it let me know that I could focus on something different, you know, because I'd be the first one to admit that vacuum cleaner and the guitar, you know, I think everybody has that want when they're young, but drag helped change the way I looked at things, hence Anton, you know, so I went out for that, and then, my drag father, who ended up being my drag father, said, why don't you do this trailer park show, or trailer park badge, and I did that, and I won that. And so then I was like, oh, cool. That started me being at the park more. Now, that was still 5 years ago. I didn't really jump into Pride because I won Mr. Roanoke MI in 2013 also. Or Mr. Roanoke Pride MI.
Could you specify what MI means?
It's male impersonator.
Okay.
I won that in 2013 also. I didn't really help out with the board or a lot of stuff, but for the last 2 years, last year we helped out my family. I have a drag family named the Black Family, and part of my belief is you have to get back to the community, and so that's extremely important to the members of my family because it's a requirement. That's just part of being a Black. So we started going, if there was a big event outside, we'd put up the fencing, things like that. We didn't so much become involved with the board or with Pride and Prism until this year. We helped out with the Angel Tree last year. We helped out with the Angel Tree this year, you know, but it's the last 2 years that a lot of our focus has really been on Roanoke Pride and Prism in particular, and seeing ways in which we can help the community. Right down to a project that I'm extremely excited about. It's a clothing closet, LGBTQ clothing closet. And the reason I'm so excited about it is because we have this moment where, unfortunately, the political elements are kind of drifting backwards, where we had some recognition and some openness and actual love being shown to us up until 2016. You know, some of that's changed. But we do still have transgender members of our community, and these people need to get jobs. If they're FTM, they need binders. You know, if they're living their life, we feel like we have to help them. And binders are not inexpensive. They cost, you know, around $40 typically, give or take. Wigs that you can wear to work are not inexpensive. So for our MTFs, we're going to need wigs, makeup. We have people who are willing to do seminars with that so that they can feel comfortable in the body they're in and get the job they want and desire. We're also talking about doing seminars to help people interview You know, these are things that directly give back. We need to help the youth in the community. We need them to feel good about who they are. So the clothing closet's huge in that aspect. Also business clothing. Hopefully we'll get really good results and have people be able to be their best selves as they pursue whatever the job they're looking for in the workforce. And we're always open to other ways we can help, so that's a good thing, because there's things that we haven't thought of or kicked off. We're also talking about a food closet. Those plans are in action, because let's face it, there's plenty of LGBTQ people who are in need, and the way things have been going recently, they don't necessarily feel comfortable going to the churches that they would have gone to previously or the other organizations. So we want to take care of our own, you know, and be good to people. Did I answer the question?
You did. I don't remember what it was. No, you did. Okay. I'm telling you, I will bring it right back on. So you were telling, and you got super excited, like you put down your cup, you sat up a little bit, you're like, here's this clothes closet. So do you think that as like a trans man that you would have benefited from that, or if somebody else had already started this, like say this was existed 10 years ago, and do you think that that would have helped you with your Anton life?
God, yes. See, the funny thing is, at one point when I was much younger, when I went to the bar, I saw Rosa Lakes. She was a drag queen. She wasn't the prettiest. And unfortunately, she had been, according to what I heard, she had been beaten very badly at some point by some men who didn't appreciate her. And she held her head to the side. The one thing I remember is she would always, "It's my birthday! You gonna buy me a drink?" She was a short little black trans woman, or it would probably be just transvestite, you know, in that aspect. But I remember her being on stage. She was not the most fearsome drag queen by any means, but she let me know in that instant, because she was the first one I'd ever seen on stage, it's okay. You know, if she could be up there, you know, she wasn't decked out in jewels or anything, but she was having her moment on that stage, and you couldn't tell her nothing. She thought she was Diana Ross on that stage, and they let me know it would be okay. And the only thing I could think of was, damn, why can't guys do this? You know, boom. And it just because I hadn't seen it. So that thought was in my head probably from about 21, but I still hadn't seen male lead. And apparently, I missed a lot of male lead for the years that I was out. What was your question?
I was asking if, like, the closet that you were talking about,
Okay. If
that would also have helped you. And so you started talking about, I remember the name that you said, Rosa Lakes.
Yeah.
So you talk about Rosa Lakes.
Now I know why I was, it's a segue transition.
Yeah.
For me, it would have helped. It would have helped to have somebody to talk to. You know, and that's another thing that we wanted to provide for people, is to have somebody to talk to. Because if you don't have anybody to talk to, you don't know what the hell you're doing. You know, binding daily, you know, there are things that are important. You know, some of these youngsters are out there and they are damaging themselves using ACE bandages, you know. We want them to do it the proper way, you know, where when they, if they elect to have the surgery, that the doctor doesn't have a hard time, you know, or that they don't damage the breast tissue they have, you know, it's important for them to have somebody to talk to. I didn't have that in this whole thing.
No, you're okay.
I'm tapping the table.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
We have it on the big little box thing, but also.
So right, thank you, Kitty. Thank you. You know, it would have been nice to have someone to talk to help me through certain aspects of it. Now, you can learn certain aspects of it through drag, which is where I did learn it. But as far as a transitioning person, they need someone to talk to. Someone to walk that line with them, someone to call, you know. Because it's hard. I don't care who you are. You're going to have family members that are cool. You're going to have family members that absolutely detest it. You're going to have family members that talk shit. It's a big range of things, you know. And I think that's why the park is so central, is because at least that's the one place where your cousins that you grew up playing water balloons, throwing water balloons with, and playing water guns and hide and seek and duck duck goose, all of a sudden they want nothing to do with you. Oh, because you're that, you know, you're like that, you know. And Facebook is awful in some cases because that's where you learn some of your family members, you know, they agreeing with the bathroom bill, and you're like, oh, you know, did you forget I'm trans, you know? And yeah, you know, we got to protect our children. Stop. Stop. There have been no trans bathroom incidents, you know. So it's hard. It's hard. And the park gives me that place where I can be me. So the least I can do is help other people to be themselves. So I think that's what I'm getting back to. Yes, I wish that had been there before for me. But, you know, the Trailblazers did so much. You know, they couldn't cover every angle and every aspect. And nobody knew that being trans would come to the forefront during Obama's presidency. Nobody knew that. You know, trans people are like, what? What's going on? You know, so it's a process of learning together, trying to be there for one another, and being represented. You know, that's the other thing. You know, I don't know a lot of other black trans men, you know. But I do know other trans men, you know. And, but in my experience, being black, growing up in a black household, luckily I didn't have the church every day. And I know a lot of black trans women, you know, I didn't have the constant church thing. So I didn't get berated on the church side. I didn't have to worry about that. But I did have the Bible thumpers in my family who were more than happy to berate me at home, you know, or if I went over to their house or something like that. So, you know, times changed. But as we can tell from the current political climate, some things stay the same.
So we are at like 37 minutes. You said that you wanted to maybe take a break. Would that be good for you?
That'd be fantastic.
Cool, so we'll take a break and then we'll be back. Woo!